Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT podcast. So since we spoke last, I had my ED critical care conference, which went wonderfully. Despite our headliner Thomas Scalia canceling due to the snow, we still had a fantastic conference. You will see those shows posted on the website in the coming weeks, so check it out. What we're going to talk about today on the show is hyponatremia in the emergency department. Now, in preparation for this show, I read a lot of the nephrology literature. And the conclusion I came to is, I still do not understand renal physiology. I was the physiology teaching assistant during medical school for most of my years there, and I've had a pretty good grasp of everything except the kidneys. I just can't seem to master that damn renal physiology. But I think I do have a grasp on a simpler approach to hyponatremia in the ED. We're going to talk about four steps. Step one, send the right labs. Step two, treat CNS dysfunction. Step three, don't do anything else. And then step four, what to do when you couldn't follow step three. All right, so hyponatremia, essentially we're talking about folks with sodiums less than 130. That's at the point where they probably should be admitted. Some people would say 135, but I think 130 is pretty much an absolute cutoff when the patients start getting at risk of bad sequelae from their low sodium. So the first step is to send a whole bunch of labs. Now, I assume you already have a chemistry back because that's how you figured out they were hyponatremic to begin with. So what you do is, to that chemistry, you add on a serum osmolality, a uric acid, and you might as well send a TSH and cortisol if there's any chance the patient could be hypothyroid or adrenally suppressed. And since we never really know in the ED, I usually just send these labs routinely. And then you got to get some urine. And almost all these patients, if they have any symptoms at all, are going to need a Foley. So you might as well not wait for them to pee and just either straight cath them or put a Foley catheter in, because you're going to want to know their urine output. So you put the Foley in, you get some urine, you send it for a UA, urine electrolytes, urine urea, urine uric acid, urine osmolality, and urine creatinine. So just to go through that again, serum, you have your electrolytes already. You have a serum osm, you have a serum uric acid, and a TSH and cortisol. And then urine is UA, ulites, urine urea, urine uric acid, urine osmolality, and urine creatinine. All right, you don't need to remember any of that. It's all in the show notes. You could refer back there if you actually have a hyponatremic patient to figure out the labs you send. Doing this before you do anything else is going to make the team upstairs so very pleased with you. You're going to be a superstar. If you start giving the patient saline or hypertonic before you do all this, they're never going to really figure out what's going on with this patient. So if you could just remember up front, send these labs. Now, you already have a chemistry tube in the lab, so you could add on those. And all you have to do is pop the Foley in to get the urine, even if the patient's seizing. As the nurse is grabbing the hypertonic, you could just slap in the Foley and get some urine. And that will really help the folks upstairs. All right, step two. If the patient's showing CNS dysfunction, you got to aggressively treat them and get that sodium up. Now, the signs of CNS dysfunction, if the patient has altered mental status, if they're comatose, if they're actively seizing, and that could be both focal or generalized, or if they have any neurologic findings, then you want to bring their sodium up. You just want to bring it up a little bit. Essentially, what you're aiming for is to get it up by about 2 to 6 milliequivalents. The way you do that is with hypertonic saline. 3% is probably the smartest way to go in these folks. So 3% saline. How you're going to give it is going to depend on how bad the patient's neurologic dysfunction is. If they're actively seizing, as opposed to the passive seizures, I would recommend giving 100 cc's of the 3% over 10 to 20 minutes. And that could be given peripherally. We had a big argument with our pharmacy as to whether this, whether 3% could be given peripherally. I've done it for years. I've not seen problems, but they wanted actual evidence. And at first, We couldn't find any because this is the kind of stuff that never gets published. But then one of our ED pharmacists came across those failed NIH hypertonic saline pre-hospital studies in which they were giving 7.5% saline peripherally, and there was no sequelae from that. So I take that to mean 3% is even safer. The way I give this drug, just like I'd give any of these osmotic agents, is if you feel your IV is safe enough to give D50 and bicarb, you could give the 3% to it. If you have one of those crappy ones in the pinky finger, I would not be pushing D50 in that line. That is just scary to do, so I would not be giving hypertonic saline in it. If you're willing to push D50 through an IV, you could give the hypertonic through it. And if your pharmacy complains, just show them those 7.5% saline trials. All right, so you've given 100 cc's of 3% over 10 to 20 minutes. If the patient is still seizing, you could repeat times one. Another 100 cc's of 3% over 10 to 20 minutes. I usually leave 10 minutes between those two doses. So essentially, 10 minutes, 100 cc's in, wait 10 minutes, see if it stops, give another 100 cc's. Now, you could try benzodiazepines in the interim, but usually they don't work for these osmotically motivated seizures. Each 100 cc's of 3% should raise your serum sodium by about 2 millimoles per liter. So if you gave two doses, we're talking 4 millimoles per liter, which is right in that range which we could raise a patient's sodium safely. Wouldn't be going beyond that. And hopefully that is taking care of the patient's symptoms. If not, I would probably get a repeat sodium level before giving more hypertonic. So two doses, 100 cc's each, 3%, can be given peripherally, generally over 10 to 20 minutes, 10 minutes between doses. That's how you treat symptomatic CNS dysfunction. Some nephrologists are scared. I'm not sure why, but they would not give that 3% over 10 to 20 minutes. They'd give each of those doses over an hour. I can't imagine looking at an actively seizing patient and giving a medication over an hour, but go with what you feel is safe. The literature is very, very scarce on what to actually do in these scenarios. But if someone's actively seizing, it makes sense to me to treat them quickly. All right, step three. Either the patient didn't have serious symptoms or you've already given them your 1 to 2 rounds of 3%. The next step is to do nothing. Hang tight. Anything you do at this point is all pain, no gain. And you might be tempted to convince yourself to give some normal saline. Oh, the patient looks a little dry. I would say don't do it. I'm going to tell you why. The big worry is osmotic demyelination. You might have heard the old names for this, central pontine myelinolysis, or any of the other names. It's now called osmotic demyelination. That's the new term. You don't want it to happen. What happens is the patient, because they've lost all the organic solutes from their brain cells, are now used to the low sodium. You correct them too quickly, and 7 days down the line, they are now in a locked-in syndrome, and they have horrible lesions on their MRI. You don't want to be that guy or that gal that caused that. And it's so easy to avoid. Just do nothing in the ED. If you fluid restrict these patients, they will not get worse, and they potentially will get better, and then you can leave it to the floor or ICU team to be the ones who potentially screw these patients up. Because essentially, from my reading, what I've come to understand is no matter what you do to these guys, if you're not insanely conservative, you have the potential to screw them up. There's a whole bunch of formulas out there that will tell you, allegedly, what kind of sodium gain you're going to get with any individual fluid. My favorite ones, because they make sense to me, are the Androg Medeas formulas. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that first name correctly. I apologize if I'm not. But they will tell you how much sodium gain you get for a liter of any fluid, like whether it be normal saline or 3%. And then you could calculate it and make sure you're not correcting them too quickly. They don't work. They overcorrect. And I'll tell you why that happens. And as a result, I don't think there's anything you could do that's really going to be safe unless you are insanely obsessive about this stuff. And really, what's the gain? Are you getting that much joy out of giving these patients 2 liters of normal saline? Just don't do it. Just fluid restrict them and leave them. What could happen is most of these patients have multifactorial causes for their hyponatremia. And we'll discuss some of these causes in just a sec. But if, for instance, one of the parts of their hyponatremia picture is dehydration, if you give them a little hydration, that liter of normal saline, which the formulas say will do nothing to their sodium, all of a sudden, that ADH turns off, and now they're putting out this incredibly dilute urine, and their sodium, through no actions of yours, could go up 12, 14, 18 in the span of 2 hours. And I've witnessed this happen, and that is bad, very, very bad. So I would say leave the patients fluid restricted unless they are hypotensive. I don't care if they look dry, they have to be actually hypotensive. I would probably confirm that, throw on the ultrasound on the IVC, make sure their hypotension is actually from being hypovolemic. And if that's the case and you want to give a liter of saline in that circumstance, knock yourself out. But I would tell you the safest way to go is after you've corrected any active CNS dysfunction, just fluid restrict them and hold tight. If you need to do something, put a Foley catheter in if you haven't already. You want to monitor these patients' urine output. Put these patients on fall precautions. Hyponatremia is a big cause of disequilibrium and falls, and you do not want your patient to break their hip on the way to the bathroom. All right, let's talk causes very briefly. I'm not going to go into this in depth because, honestly, it doesn't matter to you. Do you actually care? I mean, this is really just for your intellectual curiosity because you're going to do the same thing no matter what the cause is. And if you follow my prescription, you're never going to screw these patients up. But some of the more interesting causes. There's a whole host of medications that could do it. And I'm not going to go through the whole list. I have an article in the show notes that has more meds than you could even keep in your mind at any one time that causes hyponatremia. So they're there. The big player in the med world is the thiazide diuretics. So if a patient's on that, that's probably your culprit 9 times out of 10. There's everyone's favorite psychogenic polydipsia. And you really would have a hard time drinking enough water to cause severe hyponatremia if you had nothing else going on, because you'd have to basically drink 20 liters a day. And even the psych patients don't have access to that. You'd essentially need to put a hose down your throat. But almost all of them are on psych meds, and that actually potentiates the hyponatremia. So that's how they wind up with it. They're thirsty from the psych meds, they drink a lot, and the psych meds themselves are leading to drug-induced hyponatremia. And the treatment for those guys is easy. Treat their CNS dysfunction if necessary. Usually it's not because it's a chronic issue. And then fluid restrict them. There's beer potomania. I love this one. What happens is these big drinkers, they're getting all their calories from the booze. And there's no solutes in the booze. And you need a little solute to actually excrete water. You can't just pee pure water. So eventually what happens is they can't get rid of all the water from that beer. And if they're drinking enough, they wind up hyponatremic because they're getting all their calories from the beer. Pretty cool. Caution to some of my residents. All right, we mentioned hypothyroid. We mentioned adrenal suppression. Stress alone could cause hyponatremia through mechanisms I don't quite understand, but usually they're talking about the stress of surgery or the stress of a procedure, not the stress of your USMLE step threes. Exercise-induced hyponatremia. Now, this doesn't seem like a big deal until you realize patients die from this. And if you have a marathoner who maybe hadn't trained as much as they should and they come in seizing, a lot of the articles I've read recommend giving those patients hypertonic even before the sodium comes out. There's not too much that's going to cause seizures in a marathoner besides the hyponatremia. And so if you have someone who's just coming up from marathon, sure, you might want to start with your Ativan and such. But then a lot of the literature recommends giving that 100 cc's at 3% as you're waiting for your labs. And I can't find a single reason you could harm any patient with 100 cc's of 3%. So I would say feel very free if you have any possibility of hyponatremia as a cause of CNS dysfunction. Just give 100 cc's of 3%. Now, similarly, if a patient was at a rave and they had taken ecstasy, ecstasy causes hyponatremia through a number of mechanisms. It stimulates thirst. It probably has some direct drug induction of hyponatremia. And a lot of the times what they're hydrating with at the raves is hypoosmotic fluids like water or Gatorade. So if you have a patient come in from a rave and their friend said, yeah, she just took some ecstasy, if they were seizing, I also probably would just empirically give them one shot of 3% while I'm waiting for the sodium to come back. You might hear a term cerebral salt wasting, probably not an ED diagnosis. It's almost exclusively seen in subarachnoid patients. Very difficult to differentiate between the other big player, SIADH. I'm not going to go through any of that. It's more applicable to us in the ICU. Doesn't help your management to really know any of these causes. If you follow what I'm saying, you don't need to know what's causing it. You've sent the labs, let the team upstairs figure it out. If you really want to understand the causes and how to evaluate the lab tests, I have an incredible article in the show notes. You can take a look at that. All right, the last thing I'm going to mention before we bring it all home is, let's say you could not listen to me. You couldn't just sit on your hands and follow step three. And you decided to give them 2-3 liters of normal saline. They diuresed out more fluid than you put in. And now you repeat their sodium and it's jumped 14 points. What do you do? Now, this is a little more controversial, but you actually could give DDAVP to turn off their dilute urine production. And the dose is much smaller than you're used to for reversing things like aspirin. In those cases, we give 0.3 micrograms per kilogram. In this case, you're going to give a flat dose of 1 to 2 micrograms of DDAVP. And what that should do is just keep their sodium steady, maybe lower it the slightest little bit. At this point, if you really have knocked their sodium up by 14, that's a big problem. That's more than you ever would want to correct the patient. You could talk to your nephrologist and see. Some folks would recommend giving this patient a small dose of D5W to actually bring their sodium down a little and make up for that overcorrection. I probably wouldn't recommend doing it on your own, but if you could talk to your renal guys and you could all come to a consensus, then 6 cc's of D5W over an hour will bring the sodium down by about 2 millimoles per liter. And you could get them back to that safe correction point. Now, we haven't discussed what the safe correction point is, and I'm going to give you what's called the rule of sixes. And the rule of sixes is, in a patient experiencing CNS dysfunction, shoot for no more than 6 millimoles per liter correction in the first 6 hours. So that 2 doses of hypertonic we talked about, which is about 4 millimoles per liter change in the sodium, is right in that ballpark. So no more than 6 in the first 6, and then no more than 6 per day. Now, that's a lot more conservative than you might have heard. You might have heard you could go 0.5 millimole per hour, which would be 12 in a day, and then they cut that back to 8. Even that in the ED, just stick with the 6. Never correct any patient in the ED more than 6, ever. And then you're golden. You never have to worry. That article that had the rule of sixes is the best article to read if you want a brief foray into the new thinking on this stuff. I'm going to put that in the show notes as well. Let me just look here and see if I forgot anything. Okay, yes, 2 things I've forgotten. First off, if they had CNS dysfunction and they're not coming back to baseline, get a head CT. Maybe you're missing something. And then the last point before we bring it all home, correcting potassium will actually correct sodium, which can be good or bad. If the patient's severely hypokalemic and you start giving them runs of K, potassium in the serum determines serum sodium as well. And the reason is that when the patient is hypokalemic, K comes out of the cell and sodium shifts into the cell. And now you come along and you correct their potassium, sodium will shift back out of the cell. And these patients could get overcorrected just from their potassium repletion. So you got to be really careful. And if you're going to correct the potassium, make sure you're sending serum sodiums every hour or so and make sure you're not screwing these guys up. All right, so to review, Hyponatremia in the ED, MCRIT method, easy as possible. Step one, send a lot of labs. Step two, if they're seizing, if they're comatose, if they're altered, 100 cc's at 3% over between 10 minutes and 60 minutes. Wait a little bit. If you need to, repeat times one. Send a repeat sodium. Step three, hang tight. Don't treat them at this point. Just fluid restrict them. Put a Foley in. Think about things instead of doing things. Hurry up and stand there. Step four, if you've screwed up step three and you've overcorrected these patients, you could shut off that dilute urine by giving 1 to 2 micrograms of DDAVP. A little bit controversial. Talk with your folks, see if this is something hospital-wide that they think's a good idea. If you really screwed the pooch and you overcorrected these guys dramatically, you can bring their sodium back down a little with D5W. I would not recommend doing this without your renal folks involved. All right, that's all for this week. I think I've run a little bit over my time. I apologize. Comments in the show notes or on the Facebook page or tweet me on Twitter. And if you haven't yet, please, 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 please go to iTunes and give me a 5-star review. And if you have a moment, write glowing comments on the iTunes. All right, Scott Weingart for the MCRIT Podcast. Bye-bye.